The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy and how you can make the most of your own life right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan. And not only I'll ask, are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry, but are you ready for 40 consciences of psychiatry? Because we're getting down to the wire. And 4 days from now, on Friday, April 8th, this 2011, we will be having the first empathic therapy conference in Syracuse, New York. This is the last time I'll be announcing it because 4 days from now, we're there. It's going to be a marvelous conference. We're nearly full, but there's still time for folks to come from anywhere they can make it from. And we do have people making it from around the world, from as far away as Bangladesh. They're coming to this conference. It's a wonderful opportunity to meet people from around the world who are concerned about reform in psychiatry, about replacing the drugs and electroshock and diagnoses and authoritarianism with more loving, empathic, caring, effective approaches to helping human beings. Again and again, we learn from any significant research that looks at it that what human beings in distress need is thoughtful, caring, informed other human beings to help them through their time of difficulty. And you'll be hearing about this on every level at the conference. You'll hear about how the head injured can benefit from informed therapeutic relationships. We can't really physically heal the brain now in any intrusive way. We can provide general good nutrition and health, but we can help heal the person and hence the brain through relationships with people who are brain injured, people who have post-traumatic stress disorder, people who are depressed and anxious, children who have been diagnosed with everything under the sun as they currently get diagnosed. And you're going to hear people from Switzerland and Colombia, South America, and virtually around the world talking about new and better approaches. And you're welcome, whether you're a therapist, a psychiatrist, a psychologist, social worker, we have a lot of counselors coming, whether you're someone just interested in reform, whether you're a victim of psychiatric abuse, or you've lost a loved one to suicide and violence. We're going to have an incredible panel that involves me and an attorney and a woman who lost her daughter to suicide as a child, when she was 12 to suicide. So we've just got all kinds of important and interesting and serious and uplifting things. And if you come on Saturday night, you'll get free dessert and a chance to watch my first psychotherapy training film. Empathic Therapy, a psychotherapy training film on the Saturday night. So come along to the Empathic Therapy Conference. You can find out everything you need to know about it at empathictherapy.org, empathictherapy.org. And you can, if you're more familiar with Bragan.com, B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com, you can get there from Bragan.com. Now, my guest today will be presenting at the conference on Saturday, and his name is Charles Whitfield. Some of you may recognize that this is his second time on the show. Not too many folks in our young history have been on the show for a second time, but I have great admiration for Dr. Whitfield, and I thought he'd be a very apt person to have the week of the conference. And he'll be there with his wife, Barbara, who'll be doing a workshop on spirituality in therapy. They work together as a couple. They do a lot of things that sound kind of the way Ginger and I live and help each other to grow and help each other to help others and to get out into the world, to get our word out into the world. Charles L. Whitfield. Charles is a therapist in private practice in Atlanta, Georgia. He's a physician and a psychotherapist. He didn't get there through psychiatry. He got there through being a doc who did, among other things, cancer treatment. He was 23 years at Rutgers. He's a consultant to the Centers for Disease Control. He's been voted by his peers to be one of the best doctors in America. He's been on radio and television in addition to this show. He has a very famous book from a number of years ago, Healing the Child Within. Some of you in the field may have read it, and some of you who are just interested in child abuse may have read it. And he's got a bunch of new books. And Charles, are you there?
Yes, Peter.
And what's the name of your new book? I've read it, and I've actually, I think I edited a few pages of it. And what's the name of it?
It's called Not Crazy, You May Not Be Mentally Ill.
Not Crazy, You May Not Be Mentally Ill. And in fact, and I'm certain
title,
you're not, because it's just not a concept that really flies very well. You may be suffering.
The subtitles are what I think is perhaps the most interesting. The subtitles are Misdiagnosed and Mistreated with Drugs That Don't Work Well or Make You Worse. Important Information Withheld from You by the Drug Industry, Psychiatry, Government, and Others.
What are the themes? Tell us a little more about the book.
Well, it talks a lot about really what the problems are when people come in to a physician's or any kind of a clinician's office, including a psychiatrist, and how they can get misdiagnosed with their presenting complaints of depression or an anxiety problem or whatever. And they can be most commonly misdiagnosed as having a psychiatric illness when in fact, in actuality, they have post-traumatic stress disorder or they're grieving a significant hurt, loss, or trauma, or they're involved in one or more toxic relationships, or they're already taking a toxic psychiatric or other drug. They may be addicted to alcohol or drugs, and so on. So there are a number of situations where people actually have much more treatable and curable, if you will, problems than just putting a Band-Aid on them with drugs.
Now, your viewpoint, Charles Whitfield, Dr. Whitfield, emphasizes a lot trauma in childhood. Am I correct about that? Your feeling is that a lot of what gets diagnosed as depression, anxiety, OCD, or whatever, bipolar, is really about recovering from trauma?
Correct.
Talk about that some. I think it's such an important concept.
The three main kinds of trauma that we, childhood and adolescent trauma that we have talked about are the most common one is psychological or emotional abuse. And then there's the sexual abuse and physical abuse. But the fourth one happens in at least one out of four abused kids, and that's child neglect.
That's a hard one to pin down because it's not such an obvious abuse. And I think some of us raised in the best homes, experience child neglect. One of the things that my patients or clients puzzle about, that people in general puzzle about, is why is it that it seems to be so common that when we've been abused, sexually abused, emotionally abused, neglected, all of these things, that there's such a tendency on our part as persons to get into repetitive situations. I think that's always worth looking at and thinking about. And I'd like to know your thoughts on why in the world do all of us, I think, and if you agree with me about that, but all of us have a tendency to repeat the destructive patterns we experience as children.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the reenactment. Freud called it the repetition compulsion. We are reenacting the trauma in one way or another, with ourselves or with more often with other people. And I think deep down what that is that's an attempt to try to expose it so that it can be healed. You know, it's like if I keep repeating the same thing over and over, not only is it something I'm comfortable with, I'm familiar with, but maybe one day somebody will recognize it and say, hey, this is what's really wrong, and you don't have to keep doing this. I mean, you know, what prostitutes do. 9 out of 10 prostitutes have been molested as children. And so they, in their job, prostitution, they're not only reenacting the original trauma, but they're getting paid for it. And most of the time, they're in control of it. But I think also deep down, they, in a hidden way, wanna get light shined on it so they can try to heal from it. And that's just one example of how this repetition can come into play.
And you've really given two in there, because you suggested that one of them is that desire to master the situation, that the person goes through it again and again, hoping eventually to master it. The man who marries women who are loveless, like trying again and again to get something from the stone, or the woman who has an alcoholic dad and then marries an alcoholic maybe once, twice, trying to finally cure the alcoholic or master the situation with the alcoholic. You think that's a part of it too?
Sure it is.
Any more thoughts about that? Because I think it's one of the keys to life is unlocking ourselves from these repetitive patterns, these self-defeating patterns, which often begin with trying to deal with abuse as a child. So you're saying one is to expose it. We didn't say this, but maybe one is to expose it to the world to show how bad it is. Another is to master it. Another is to finally get the feelings out in the open, to heal them.
Yes. Yeah, all of those.
Yeah. And how do you help that? How do you help in therapy with that? You and your wife work together in a group, don't you?
We do individual and group therapy, yes, with adults who were abused as kids. Nearly everybody in our groups have PTSD in one form or another. So, you know, what we do is we facilitate their telling their stories. And as they tell their stories in this safe environment, they have somebody witnessing their story. And they didn't get shamed. They didn't get attacked. They didn't get judged. As a matter of fact, usually the feedback they get is compassion. And that's happened to me too. You know, so their fellow group members can identify with it and says, yeah, I know what you mean. And here's the way it happened to me. And so getting to observe and witness each other in our story after story over time in a safe environment, more and more of their real history and their real self comes out.
So the more they talk about the abuse, the more the kind of the real person, the identity, the real personality or character of that human being comes out?
Yeah, of course, that's the real self, or the true self, as opposed to the false self or the ego.
All of this is so real to me. I hope it's not too abstract for the listeners. I found it really interesting. It sounds like you yourself in the group, working in the group, may disclose something of yourself where you've been through something and feel humiliated and get support from the group.
No, we try not to do that because, sometimes we do. But I think it's the focus. We like to keep the focus on our
people,
on
who
our group
paying
members,
us and coming and to
on
us
our,
for help.
And on our patients, and not on us. Because see, what they'll start to do, if we talk too much about our own history, then they'll start to focus on us.
That's not
the point of the therapy, of course.
Right.
The point is to focus on them. And their healing.
I think it is important for people who come for help to really understand how universal the experience is of having been abused and of having to struggle to get out of the repetitive pattern. So they understand they're really participating in a very human, in many ways, very ordinary struggle to get free of oppression, and how easy it is to fall back in and to feel humiliated again and again. And I'll share a little bit of myself just to let folks know. I may look like I have it all together, but in fact, we all struggle with these issues. It's an inevitable part of growing up, because we grow up, we're so helpless during the growing up process. We have to work our way into adulthood, and during that helplessness, we inevitably have painful experiences and have to struggle with what to do about them.
Sure.
Do you want to say anything more about this? And then I would like to get on and talk more about your views and my views on psychiatric meds. Any more thoughts about recovery from trauma? I hope you're going to talk some about that. You have a full hour at the conference. I hope you'll cover just a lot of what you believe.
Sure. And the recovery from trauma takes a long time, and it's multifaceted usually. You know, it's individual work in their counseling or psychotherapy and group therapy, and then self-help groups of adult children of alcoholics. Fellowships, which are free group work, and it's not just adult children of alcoholics. This is adult children of trauma, really. The adult children of alcoholics is just kind of a name that lets people in, and that's the way it started. But I think all the people that have been in this fellowship for a long time know that it's not just growing up in a family where there was a dysfunctional alcoholic.
Are people who are not going to say, you know, I'm Joe and I'm an alcoholic, people who are going to say, I'm Joe or Jane and I've been through a lot of trauma in childhood, are they going to be welcome in a group of adult children of alcoholics?
Absolutely, absolutely. They'll immediately say, hello, Joe. You know, in the traditional welcoming.
Good, good, good. But you and I share so much. You know, we're going to meet for the first time face to face. We've talked many times, emailed many times, read each other's work. We think very much alike. It's just going to be a pleasure to meet you and Barbara at the conference. Let's switch over to what is essentially very shared views we have on psychiatric meds, and talk about why, what you think about them. I can't hear you. Are you there?
Something has happened, Peter. I don't know what it is. Do you have?
I hear you now, but I didn't hear you for a minute.
Yeah, I don't know who that was.
You don't know? All right, it's doing okay now. Okay.
Yeah.
We have a caller on hold, and let's keep him on hold for a little bit. And Charles, let's just start out and talk about what your views are on psychiatric meds. Go right to it. Don't be shy about it.
I've been looking at these drugs from way back, from the 1960s on, and the first antipsychotic came out in the mid-50s, of course, and I didn't see all that come out, but I did see it in the mid-60s and on, and I always had my doubts about them, and I was in, my original training, of course, was in internal medicine, and then I got boarded in hematology and oncology, but I always had a skeptical view of psychiatric drugs, and I kept looking for reasons to use them for the good, and it was so hard to come by. And just over the years, the one term that has stuck with me for the effect of these drugs is the word shotgun. That these drugs do not hit the target. If you had a bow and arrow and you were a marksman and you were shooting at a bullseye, a target, you wanted to hit the bullseye. That's exactly what we want in all of medicine when we use drugs. We want to be able to hit the defect that's causing the disease. But the problem with psychiatric drugs is most of them, nearly all of them, don't do that. What they do is that they hit the entire target. They hit everything all around the target, and any people who may be standing or animals who may be standing and the person who's shooting, that these are shotgun chemicals that cause mind-numbing, brain disabling, they disrupt metabolism, cause weight gain, diabetes, violence. Instead of preventing suicide, they actually increase suicidality in many cases. They knock out normal healthy sexual functioning in many situations. And they just cause more craziness than they help. And I think a lot of these people just think that they're better because they get kind of entranced by the drug, which you've wisely termed spellbinding.
Medication spellbinding. Yeah, and I like that you use the term brain disabling. I think My medical book is called Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry. All the psychiatric interventions, shock treatment, lobotomy, all the medications, they all basically disrupt broadly the biochemical functioning of the brain. Some people feel some relief because they get some apathy or indifference. Some people get a mild euphoria for a while, which is one of the most deadly things to get, because you get a little euphoria from taking Prozac, wears off, then you want to try another and another and another, hoping to regain that little bit of euphoria. But euphoria is even more abnormal in some ways than the blunting, and ultimately more dangerous if it leads to mania. And it's true for every psychoactive substance that they disrupt the brain function. you may feel relaxed on a martini in the evening, and it's fine if a person wants to have a martini and relax in the evening, unless there's some medical reason not to. But the relaxation comes at the cost of reducing the function of cells throughout the brain in regard to alcohol. So there's no way around that all the psychoactive substances available are disrupting brain function. It's an extremely important concept. And then people get spellbound. What I call, as you mentioned, medication spellbinding, and they don't know what's happening to them. They think they can drive better than ever than when they're a menace on the highway. They think they're the life of the party when they're the death of it. And they think they're doing great on Prozac when they're flat and withdrawn, or they may be high or euphoric. And then there's the problem of coming off the drugs, which is such a serious problem that I always have to put a caveat in when I remember to, and it's in all my books and on my website, which is that withdrawing from psychiatric drugs can be as dangerous as starting them, because once again, you're jarring the brain and by the sudden changes. And to withdraw from psychiatric drugs should be done cautiously and hopefully with reasonable clinical supervision and support in the family or friends in coming off drugs. So going on is dangerous, coming off is dangerous. Do you use them at all, Charles, in your work?
That I think the withdrawal is responsible for many of the people being misdiagnosed and mistreated, because their clinician doesn't identify the situation as psych drug withdrawal. They just kind of ignore that most of the time, and they'll come up with any diagnosis from bipolar to some kind of psychotic episode or whatever, when in fact it's just drug withdrawal.
Yeah, and we see even teachers doing that. They'll say, well, I know Johnny needs his Ritalin because when he misses a dose, he's all wired up. And they have no idea that he's in withdrawal the day after his last dose. And that's why he's wired up, and he just needs a chance for his poor brain to recover. It's just appalling, especially now, to see these kids on four, five, six drugs. I'm seeing young people in their 20s on multiple drugs who've been on them for 10 years. They're in their 20s. And I don't know about you, but I find it can be really difficult at times to help people come off the drugs. They need a support system that they may not have. They need a strength they may not have. And I think it's just a disaster to be getting people on so many of the meds. It's getting worse and worse, isn't it, Charles?
When the family doesn't recognize what you just said, what the family's doing is enabling the person to continue being drugged with these toxic drugs, and it just makes it easier on the family members if the person stays subdued with these drugs.
Yeah, they get scared, too, because the person's been on drugs and has gotten crazy, sometimes before they're on meds, often after. They've been in a hospital. The parents, the wife or the husband, get sensitized. They get scared. So the moment the individual coming off drugs starts to have feelings, the family panics, no matter how well-intentioned they are. And sometimes, of course, they have their own issues and are not so perfectly well-intentioned. So it can be very hard for the family with the individual coming off the meds. But we have so much evidence that you can help people without drugs. And maybe we can talk more about that when we come back in a couple of minutes and talk about the tardive dyskinesia. I'd like to talk a little about tardive dyskinesia. I'd like to talk some about some of the alternatives that we have for treating people without meds, how you do it. And also, we'll be taking a caller when we come back who wants to talk about a family member, if he's still on, and I would ask him to really use a lot of anonymity to protect his family member.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network. Do you want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
I'm Elaine Snuffa, host producer of Evolving Ideas. Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and global on the Internet. Join me each week on the Progressive Radio Network to explore the universe and our relationship to it.
South of the border.
Are you one of the millions caught up in that first world rat race? Well, I used to be. I'm John Mueller, host of the Expat Files, where we discuss what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire down in Latin America. Can you really live like a king down here on a crummy Social Security check? What about starting a business or buying a house or love and romance? Just tune in Monday and Wednesday at 8 p.m. and send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And to listen to any of my past shows, just go to progressiveradionetwork.com/archives and click on the link to the Expat Files. Nos vemos.
I kissed a smile upon her face.
Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day, and I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one form that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is Dr. Peter Bregan, and my guest today is a very esteemed colleague, I mean very esteemed, Charles Whitfield, addiction specialist, trauma specialist, author of many books, a best-selling author, and a very wise man who works as with his wife, as I do, with his wife Barbara Whitfield. Both of them will be at our conference in 4 days. This coming Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, April 8th, 9th, and 10th. And he'll be talking for an hour on Saturday. Another marvelous person can be there on Saturday, and you'll enjoy meeting Charles. This is my friend Doug Smith, a psychiatrist from Alaska, who is a deeply empathic and caring psychiatrist and therapist. We have a guest. Are you there? Our guest with us, John?
You mean me, Peter?
Yeah, John, is that you?
Yes, John.
Okay. Without giving away any identifying information, describe what the issues you're calling in about.
Okay, doctor. My loved one, who actually is sitting here with me, about 4 years ago, suffered a series of traumatic events, a couple deaths, the death of our child, death of her father, and she broke her legs, a few things. So they first prescribed her a benzodiazepine to help her with the anxiety. They diagnosed her with post-traumatic stress, and since then, she has also been admitted to psych a couple times. She's had suicidal ideations. They put her on Risperdal as well, and also Depakote a couple times. And we've been trying over the last 4 years to get her off of these medications, and with no success whatsoever. It's getting progressively worse. The suicidal ideations are getting worse. She's now developed akathisia. She just has unbelievable depression, and she's actually a registered nurse who's been completely disabled. She's unable to work now, and we cannot get a professional to help us. Anyone that we go to see, they say that, you know, her episodes are recurring, so they need to put her back on the meds every time we try to pull her off of them. And we know better because, being a nurse, she has researched them inside and out, and we know what it is, but we can't get anyone to help us.
And what medications is your wife on? Can she speak on the phone, too? I'd like to say hello to her.
Yes, I can speak. I'm right here.
Hi. Well, boy, have you ever been through terrible stuff? How long ago was it? You lost a child?
And it was 2008, so it was 3 years ago.
That's one of life's most difficult traumas, is the loss of a child. And you also lost your father, did I hear correctly?
And I just had an accident where I fell down in a city street and broke both of my legs.
Oh, my God.
So it was a series of events that led me to, you know, when I went to my doctor, I was having very, very bad anxiety, of course, and trouble sleeping, that they prescribed anxiolytic medication for me. At the time, I was working. I was a highly functional registered nurse in a management position and able to work. And since I've been on these medications, it's been, since I've tried to come off the medications, every time I try to come off of them, of course, I start going through very severe withdrawal.
What meds are you on now?
Right now, I ended up asking them to switch me from the Ativan and Klonopin they had me on over to Valium for an easier withdrawal because of the long half-life. Now they've added Risperdal into the cocktail. They added Depakote as well. I've managed to come down off of the Depakote, but I'm still on Risperdal and Valium. Every time I try to lower or discontinue these medications, the withdrawal is so bad that I become actively suicidal. So it's dangerous for me to be home and by myself and not working and be in this state.
Mm-hmm.
So I've tried to look for places where I could be hospitalized or someplace where I could be safe so that I can actually withdraw these medications, but no practitioner will support me coming down off of these medications. If anything, they just want to keep adding more and more drugs to the mix, saying, oh, well, the doctors have actually said, oh, well, maybe you're bipolar. I'm bipolar, all of a sudden, you know, where are these diagnoses coming from? I had anxiety and was functioning, and now I'm not. And like I said, every time, it's always within a few days of reducing the medication that I start going, you know, through the roof, of course.
Have you been in any kind of serious therapy for all that you've been through?
I went to see a therapist for a little while, but I wasn't really getting much out of it. If anything, it was just rehashing a lot of traumatic events, and I found myself just becoming more and more upset.
Were you on medication while you were going through that?
I've been on medication nonstop for the past 3 years.
So when you were doing the therapy, you were also on meds?
Yes. The medications don't do a lot to help me. I mean, I still have severe incapacitating anxiety, insomnia, but when I withdraw, I start with a very, very strong suicidal ideation, and I become very unsafe. I become where I can't sit still, I can't stop moving, I can't stop crying, anytime I try to come down off of these drugs. And I know that what I really need to do is get off of these medications completely, because I truly believe that I will feel better once these drugs are out of my system.
Well, first of all, if you call my office...
We actually did that today.
Oh, you did it today?
Yes. My husband called your office today. We've been trying to actually try to come up with the money to make the, to attend the conference this weekend, because we only live 3 hours away from Ithaca. We're in Kingston, and because I'm out of work, you know, money has become an issue. When I was working, that wasn't an issue. So we've been trying to come up with the money to actually attend the conference this weekend.
Well, listen, do me a favor, and perhaps yourselves, call the office again. It's been very hectic around here with the conference coming up. Call the office again. Now I'm going to know just who you are, and I promise to give you a call back. Now, clearly, you are a classic tragedy in terms of a person who went through real-life trauma and needed, above all else, a lot of human support and care, and a therapist, and maybe a group, a lot of help, but instead you got put on drugs that make it hard for you to even benefit from the help. Okay. You're on a drug that's addictive, Valium, and have been on addictive drugs for a while, so they're can be very hard to come off. And you're on Risperdal, an antipsychotic, which can be very, very hard to come off, mm-hmm. and which causes a variety of terrible things, including abnormal movements called tardive dyskinesia, which can cause pain and disfiguring. So you got a lot to deal with, and I would like to get in touch with you and get back to you, and I promise to do that if you call a second time. And Charles, what are your thoughts?
I know so much about these medications. I mean, I am a psychiatric nurse. This is my field. And I can't believe that, I mean, of all things, you know, that I could actually find myself in this situation. I thought I knew about these drugs until it happened to me.
Well, once you're on the drugs, what happens is you get spellbound. You don't have the judgment. You can be a psychiatrist, a neurologist. You can be a drug expert. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, in my book, Medication Madness, I describe physicians who get, and psychiatrists who get so befuddled by the drugs, they end up doing horrendous actions, and bizarre and strange actions. So the drugs, they fool us about what we're going through. Let me ask Charles Whitfield what your thoughts are about this. Do you think maybe a 12-step program in the meanwhile would be helpful?
Sure. Just find somebody safe who's a therapist who can do good psychotherapy with you, or counseling, who is not a drug pusher and who really understands PTSD. And I think you also have, on top of all the traumas from your losses, and we haven't even heard what about traumas before you lost your child. But,
right.
It sounds like what you've got in part is what I call drug stress trauma syndrome. That this is how the drugs, one way the drugs make people worse, and I see it as a variation, another variation of PTSD. It just happens to be caused by the drugs. And I see people more and more with this, and I've got a paper that was just published in the December issue of the International Journal of Risk and Safety in Medicine, of which Peter is on the editorial board. Then there's a website you may want to know about. Write this down, and anybody else interested. It's titled Beyond Meds. Beyond Meds.
Beyond Meds?
Yeah, Beyond Meds. But the web address is bipolarblast.wordpress.com.
WordPress?
WordPress, PRESS.com. And it's got just a wealth of information about exactly what you're concerned about. And then there's a place in Sedona, Arizona called Alternative to Meds, where people can go for 6 weeks or so and get off of these drugs using a holistic approach, but supervised also by alternative psychiatrists. And what you could also consider is finding a naturopath in your area, somebody that knows supplements and natural chemicals. And as far as sleep, sleep is a big problem with this, and I think I heard you mention that.
Oh, so terrible.
Yeah, they can help you with that too.
Right.
I take it you have not got
plan right now. Our plan right now is because we have nobody to help, and there's nowhere I can go inpatient that will support this. Is that it's my husband is in school. As soon as he's done with school in a couple of months, our plan is that we're going to pull these medications, and I'm going to have family with me 24 hours around the clock while I withdraw, because I need somebody with me so that I can be safe, but so that I can go through withdrawal without somebody pumping me up with more and more drugs.
Yep, sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, and now I'm on a benzodiazepine, so I'm a little bit concerned about stopping it abruptly. However, I don't think I'm on a high enough dosage that I have to worry about seizures or anything at this point. I hope not.
I would stay in touch with Peter because you're relatively close to him, and he will advise you.
How far are you from New York City in Kingston? I can't remember where that is.
I'm 90 miles north of New York City on the thruway.
I'm just north of Poughkeepsie.
Yeah, so you're near to New York City too, and I know good therapists in New York City. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about that. I'm glad you've been brave to call in, and I do hope you can get to the conference and we can talk about that. Your situation is so common now. I mean, you sound like a very strong woman. You're even on all these meds. You're clear and you're decisive in your conversation. You've got a supportive husband, mm-hmm. and yet the meds will stop the recovery process by bamboozling your mind. And
I feel sick all the time.
You know, doctor, actually, she's clear at the moment, but especially in the early morning, she is completely disoriented. She cannot think. She's extremely agitated. It seems as the day progresses and evening, when evening approaches, she seems to settle down. I don't understand that.
Well, you may be waking up in withdrawal.
I take all my medication at night before I go to bed.
Yeah, and you wake up in the morning and you're in withdrawal.
Yeah, she's just having a clear moment. This is actually a good moment because she isn't normally this clear-headed. She's been very ill for the last couple of years, and it's like I said, it's getting progressively worse. Yeah. And she's
well,
having...
maybe you're marshaling your resources to be on the radio with me and my guest, and that shows again the spiritual strength you have.
Right. Well, I want to get better.
Oh, that's so clear. I mean, I can hear it in your voice, and.
I have a great life. I have a wonderful life and a great life that I'm really anxious to get back to, and I can't function like this.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna do our best. And Charles, what about this place in Sedona? Is that going to cost mortgaging a house to go to? Do you know much about it?
It's an inpatient program, and it is expensive. But I don't know. You could ask if do they have scholarships or do they have discounts. You can at least call them and check it out.
It's called Alternative to Meds in Sedona, Arizona.
Right. Well,
they were previously in San Francisco.
Right.
Okay.
If it's an expensive thing, it's not something would be. I mean, I went from being I was making more than six figures a year in my nursing position to being on social services. That's how the impact that this has had on our lives.
Well, listen, thank you so much for calling in, and it won't be the last time we communicate.
Thank you.
And I'll get back to you, I can't right after the show, but I'll get back to you either this evening or tomorrow morning, and you'll be at, leave me the numbers where I can reach you, okay?
Okay.
Thank you for calling in. Charles, it's just so difficult to hear what our colleagues are doing to people and how they're impeding recovery. It's very frustrating, and I'm I'm hoping that someday we'll have more alternatives out there. We keep working on them, more alternatives where people can go overnight into a residential setting.
You and I both know that there are countless people just like her all over this country and all over this world that have been misdiagnosed and mistreated and end up like this.
Yeah, yeah. There's another program that would be worth looking into for our callers, and you're going to get to meet these people, Charles, at the conference. They're going to do a breakout for an hour. They're called All Addicts Anonymous, and they're going to be not far, I think, from Kingston. All Addicts Anonymous. They're on the border between New York and Pennsylvania, south of me. And they have a residential kind of program that they can at times, you know, help people and certainly help someone coming off Valium, I would think. And they're going to be at the conference, too. And that's one more reason to get there, caller, and meet All Addicts Anonymous in their workshop, which will be, I believe, on Friday. I don't have it right in front of me. The registration for the conference, including the program, the latest program, is on empathictherapy.org. The drug that she's taking, Risperdal and Valium, they have so many problems. We could do a show on each of them with ease. Risperdal is causing so many different problems for people. It causes this abnormal movements that can affect the tongue, the mouth, the face, the eyelids, breathing, speech, fingers, toes, torso, back, cause abnormal movements which, when they become spasms, are painful, or when the person can't stop moving about, it can become very agitating and anxiety-inducing. And the only way to get help with it is to get off the medication as soon as feasible. In this case, it's dangerous for our caller to rush off of the meds. But they also cause a variety of other problems, diabetes. They cause gynecomastia. Women and even men can start lactating from these drugs. They call it neuroleptic malignant syndrome, which is like an encephalitis that can be lethal. It isn't recognized and taken care of. It's just endless what they do, and their primary effect is a lobotomy effect by disrupting frontal lobe function. All the antipsychotics suppress dopamine, a neurotransmitter, the main neurotransmitter of the frontal lobes from deep in the brain, and they cause an apathy and an indifference. At least at this moment in time, our wonderful caller was full of life and energy and determination, but these drugs can sap that. But she can't risk just coming off of them automatically. She's got to display a lot of caution about coming off of them. Charles, your thoughts, further thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you're saying, and the list you just went through, and that is just a partial list of what psych drugs do, especially the antipsychotics, but goes back to that one simple word, shotgun. These drugs do not hit the target. Like penicillin knocks out gram-positive organisms when we get infections. And they are specific for gram-positive organisms. And that's hitting the bullseye. Most of the drugs in medicine have shotgun properties, and psychiatric drugs, all of them, with rare exceptions, are shotgun drugs.
And as you're pointing out, even if one of the pellets hits the target, they're not going to do any good, because it's not as if the target needs one of those pellets. It's not like insulin for diabetes. It's a mood-altering, in general, phenomena, either a flattening or a production of apathy or a production of a mild euphoria that's temporary. So even if one of the pellets hits the target, the target isn't going to like it. Unlike the body responding to penicillin that's going to knock off the pneumococci. These drugs don't do anything like that. There aren't biochemical imbalances in the brains of people who go to see psychiatrists until they get the drug. Then everyone who goes to a psychiatrist ends up with severe biochemical imbalances from the drugs. But unless the person has a thyroid disorder or Cushing's disease or diabetes or a head injury, they don't have physical underlying problems, biochemical disorders in any of the known psychiatric diagnostic categories. It's really a disastrous sham, a monstrously successful PR campaign that has convinced many physicians and most of the public that there are biochemical and genetic causes of the things that patients come to psychiatrists and therapists for, when there isn't a single one that's been demonstrated, not a single one. There isn't a psychiatrist in the country who would dare debate me on it because they don't have any facts to go on. Yep. Charles, we got three or four more minutes. I'm happy to have you talk a little more about what you'd like to communicate before we finish. This is Charles Whitfield, my friend and colleague.
Yeah, a quick way, if any of the listeners have been interested in what we've been talking about, my latest book, I will shamelessly just mention again, called Not Crazy, You May Not Be Mentally Ill, which it has in there just a great deal of practical, useful information about trauma, trauma recovery, and psych drugs, and then how to get off of them, etc. Now, Peter's great books, too. If you want to get more detailed and more academic, you can certainly read Peter's work.
Well, Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry is my scientific text, but my popular book is Medication Madness. Thank you, Charles Whitfield. A pleasure always to have you on.
Thank you, Peter.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bragan and his lifelong reform work on www.bragan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.